On September 11th, I lost my husband, Craig Scott Amundson, to the suicide attack that occurred at the Pentagon. Almost immediately, I had concerns about the United States' reaction to the attackers. I had fears of further attacks here and abroad. I began to feel pain for the women all over the world who lost or who were going to lose their husbands because of September 11th. Despite any anger I had harbored, I knew that I did not want anyone anywhere to feel the deep sorrow I was left with following the travesty of September 11th. Here I am today. My husband, Craig Scott Amundson, will not die in vain. The Amundson name will ring loud and clear across the world. We do not want war. Along with other family members, we are creating a voice. Please know that we are not comforted by the bombing in Afghanistan. I would like to share a bit of my experience while being part of a walk for healing and peace that was sponsored by Voices in the Wilderness. Along with family members, supporters, and friends, we traveled from D.C. to New York under the banner, "Our Grief is Not a Cry for War." On November 26th, I stood before the White House and read this letter. "Dear President Bush, my name is Amber Amundson. I'm a 28-year-old single mother of two small children. The reason I am a single mother is because my husband was murdered on September 11th. While working under your direction. My husband, Craig Scott Amundson, was an active duty multimedia illustrator for your Deputy Chief of Staff of Personnel Command, who was also killed. I am not doing well. I am hurt that the United States is moving forward in such a violent manner. I do not hold you responsible for my husband's death, but I do believe you have a responsibility to listen to me and please hear my pain. I do not like unnecessary death. I do not want anyone to use my husband's death to perpetuate violence. So, Mr. President, when you say that vengeance is needed so that the victims of 9/11 do not die in vain, could you please exclude Craig Scott Amundson from your list of victims used to justify further attacks? I do not want my children to grow up thinking that the reason so many people died following the September 11th attack was because of their father's death. I want to show them a world where we love and not hate, where we forgive and not seek out vengeance. Please, Mr. Bush, help me honor my husband. He drove to the Pentagon with a visualized world peace bumper sticker on his car every morning. He raised our children to understand humanity and not fight to get what you want. When we buried my husband, an American flag was laid over his casket. My children believe the American flag represents their dad. Please let that representation be one of love, peace, and forgiveness. I'm begging you, for the sake of humanity and my children, to stop killing. Please find a nonviolent way to bring justice to the world. Sincerely, Amber Amundson." I would now like to introduce, thank you, Ryan Amundson, my brother-in-law, Craig's brother.
Since September 11th, many have tried to speak on behalf of the victims' families. When some question the response of the U.S., supporters of violent retaliation sometimes shout, "Try to tell that to the victims' families." It is assumed that those most personally affected by the September 11th attacks take comfort in whatever actions our political leaders deem necessary. This assumption is not true. My family is proof. and many other families are proof. We take no comfort in the emphasis on military action as a solution to the complex economic and political problems that fuel terrorism. In fact, the prospect of more killing in the name of justice is horrifying. Only peace will bring comfort. All of us, of course, want peace. The question is, are we as a nation on the right path? We are told that our actions to oust the Taliban have been successful so far, but there are many ways of judging success. These actions are not likely to effectively combat the root causes of terrorism. Rather than exploring the reasons for such violent anti-American sentiment, our nation has first taken the course of violent retaliation. A wide swath of people are being punished in hopes of catching the guilty ones in our path of destruction. An untold number of innocent people have already been killed. Humanitarian workers have been hit. What little infrastructure Afghanistan has left is targeted for destruction. Taliban soldiers, many of whom who are forced to fight, are slaughtered by our bombs. American troops' lives have been lost. Millions risk starvation. And we are promised that this is only the beginning. Is this the path leading to peace, justice, and the assurance of safety for American citizens in the years to come? Or is it a further contribution to the cycle of violence? My brother's death as a justification for continued violence is an indignity. We don't want to see more widowed mothers like my sister-in-law, or more children without a dad like my niece and nephew, or more moms and dads outliving their sons like my parents, or more brothers losing brothers like me. Standing on the rubble, our nation will be no closer to justice and no safer than the day of the attack. Rather than succumbing to a frenzy of dangerous nationalism, many have remarked that America's situation could be regarded as an opportunity to make the world a better place. Rarely does the entire world come together like it did after September 11th. This common bond of sorrow can bring about feelings of openness and cooperation, as my family has found. But it takes a commitment to deal with your grief in a healthy way. It's also going to take a commitment for the United States and the world to deal with this in a healthy, constructive way. Focusing on fear and hatred while regarding revenge as a source of comfort is the wrong path. And unfortunately, the United States has followed a destructive course. Our nation's anger is understandable. The crime of 9/11 was an atrocity. It would be inhuman not to feel sorrow as well as anger. But it is also inhuman to act on this anger without first considering the consequences. These consequences are more death and destruction, including the likelihood of more terrorist attacks, possibly nuclear, on U.S. soil. Now, I understand the anger from myself and my fellow Americans, but I am horrified at the exploitation of these emotions to create an environment of fervent patriotism in which rational discussion is limited for the sake of political goals. Working to stop conditions which breed hate may be more complex and difficult than just dropping bombs, but the existence of evil does not have an easy solution. We agree that sacrifice is required, but this does not necessarily mean sacrificing the lives of innocent people abroad, our troops, or our freedoms here at home. The greatest honor to my brother's life would be that his death would mark the end of a vicious cycle of violence. I hoped that something good could come from something so terrible. This hope disintegrated as I heard the vengeful words of our leaders. When the bombs started falling, I felt like my brother would be just another casualty in the cycle of violence. The attackers got exactly what they wanted, holy war, with the creation of more violent fanatics on both sides. I have realized, however, that there is always hope for some change. People I meet are usually eager to discuss different points of view than what is presented in the popular media. there is a strong receptiveness to alternatives, especially when one realizes that emphasizing a military solution will not make our country or the world any safer. I just hope that our nation's leaders and the people of our nation can figure that out. Thank you.
You can access it at www.vitw.org and click on Walk for Peace. It's Voices in the Wilderness.
VITW.org.
Also on commondreams.org.
A reception. Well, we were told that we were not to stand still. We had about 20 people with us, and I guess in front of the White House, if you're holding signs, you're not allowed to stand still. So what we had to do is we all walked in a circle around Amber while she read her letter.
And I marched in place.
On the walk, we were joined by David Petorti and Colleen Kelly, both of who lost brothers in the WTC. And there are many, many other families that we've been in contact with, probably about 11 so far. But this is, you know, only there's different families are just so isolated, and there's no way to really contact each other. So we're just hoping that we can sort of get the word out and for other families to contact us so that we can start forming this organization so that we can have this voice. We have an email address that family members can contact, or anyone else can contact for that matter. It's walkforpeace, four being the number, peace, at yahoo.com.
Could I suggest that the details of this be handled perhaps at your workshop?
Come to the workshop.
Or
yeah. Change.
Did you, what if anything, what sort of a response, first of all, thank you for being here, what if any response did any of you receive from anybody in the Bush administration? And I was happy to hear about your husband, brother's bumper sticker, how typical that was of people using the Pentagon Party.
You can answer that question, I'll answer the first.
Okay. Regarding the bumper sticker, I have a feeling it was probably the only Toyota Corolla at the Pentagon with that bumper sticker. But my husband was certainly well received within his office and was very content where he was at and was able to speak about his beliefs, and that was well respected, in fact invited quite often. So that's hopeful for me that within the umbrella of the Pentagon, my husband was able to talk about other options and more peaceful ways to communicate internationally.
You'd asked about a response from the White House. I think on October 26th, and then again about a week ago, Russell McIver asked Ari Fleischer about what Bush's response is to the families of victims who are opposing the war. And basically, Ari Fleischer said, the first time he said, in the few times that America has been to war, America has won every war it's ever fought, because people like us are allowed to speak their mind, and that's why we're there fighting this war for us, so that we can have our freedoms and blah, blah, blah. It's completely avoidant and dismissive of any of our arguments.
You asked if we've had opportunities to be part of national broadcasting, and about 2 months ago I had worked on an interview. Actually, Dateline spent the day with me, and I found out that today they will be showing that segment. And
After coaxing.
Only after each live interview I had on the radio, especially nationally syndicated, I would request that people call Dateline and say, hey, there's this material. So for anyone who helped with that, thank you. Unfortunately, the interview was 2 months ago, so my mind, it's a blur. I hope that it's as current as how I'm feeling now. We'll see. As far as Oprah and those shows, we've been asked to speak, but have wanted to have more solid organization before doing that, and that's really happening now. So in the future, like I said, the Amundsen family, you'll hear about us.
One more and then stop.
You've asked us to share some experiences in our lives with Craig that have moved us to this point. And I agree with Ryan and what he spoke of earlier in his writing, that there really is no other way to deal with this or to heal. We feel like we have to speak out, and that we can no longer sit back and let things unfold as they are. The motivation really comes from the life of Craig as we've known him, and feeling like we want to continue to talk about the things that he talked about while he was at the Pentagon, and also for my children, so that they can have an understanding of what their father's life meant to me and to the family.
If we could just thank them one more time for coming, for their compassion and their honest wages.